Hey guys, I'm Jason Guymon, host of the King of Pressure Wash podcast. I am a self-employed entrepreneur. I grew my pressure washing business to $1 million business in just under 5 years. And now I'm helping hundreds of pressure washers start and grow their pressure washing business also. I'm helping you so that you can be the king of pressure washing in your area. Today's show is going to be an awesome show on the King of Pressure Wash podcast. Are you ready to get to the next level? Let's get started. What up, guys? Jason Guymon here with King of Pressure Wash. And tonight, I have a special guest all the way across the country, on the other side of the country. And tonight, we're going to talk about how to grow your business. We're going to talk about how he grew his business in the last 7 years and what we can do to help you grow. One of the things that both of us do have in common is we like equipment and like we know how to build it and do all of that good stuff. So we'll talk about equipment, and that's kind of why I hit on this here when I brought Tim on. But other than that, this week, I think that as we start getting closer to spring, we are about ready to start mowing grass. And everybody is always like, when is this phone going to start ringing? And I always tell people, it will start ringing when you start mowing grass regularly. Until then, it may or may not ring some or none. And so everybody kind of gets worried about when the phone is going to ring. And so that's what I always tell people. But who cares about that? Let's get started on tonight's episode of starting and growing and being a successful business. And before we jump on here, I see some people already on here. We got Alvin. Hello, Jason and everyone. We got TC. What's up, Jason? Tim, what's up, TC? How are you? If you have any questions, put them in the comments. And if it's a good question, I'll pull it up and we'll answer that question for you. But before we get going too far, Tim, tell me a little bit about who are you, where you're from, all of that good stuff, family, all of that.
Yeah. Good evening, guys. I'm Tim here with Expert Power Wash. We run another YouTube channel, Expert Power Wash. Just search it. You'll find it. But started a pressure washing business 7 years ago. We're out in the Portland, Oregon area, or South Portland, for anybody that's familiar with this area. And we've just been washing for the last 7 years, and then last year started dipping our feet into building equipment for you guys.
So let's start back when you started Expert Power Washing. What made you start to want to start a pressure washing business?
Well, kind of a funny story. My cousin and I, when we were 16, 17 years old, we grabbed a couple pressure washers, bungee corded them to the back of a 1985 four-door Honda Accord, and we just went out and started knocking doors. And back then, you know, we weren't really doing it as a serious thing. We were just looking to make some money for different odd and different troubles that we were getting into. But that's all we did is we used, it was kind of a side hustle for us. And then I joined corporate America. And when that position was eliminated in my corporate job that I had, the opportunity came back, and I told my wife I wanted to start a pressure washing business. She thought I was absolutely nuts. Sometimes we walk around the shop sometimes in the evening after everybody's went home, and just like sometimes we just surprise ourselves with how far we've came and what you can actually do in this type of industry.
So as a pressure washing business, just a regular old pressure washing business, right? That's what people think that we are. What is something that in 7 years ago, would you ever dream that you would hit a seven-figure business doing pressure washing?
Not in my wildest dreams.
So what are some things that has helped you, or what are some things that you've learned along the way of growing your pressure washing business?
There's a lot of things. Definitely one of the things that I really never really understood, but I knew it was something I had to do, was get off the truck, put systems into place, having a CRM. I've always told people the way that I've grown it is I've always hired for my position. So if I was on the truck, I hired a tech. I promoted myself to sales. When I made it up to that level, I hired somebody to do sales. And then now I'm in the shop and we're looking at continuing to promote myself and hire underneath myself. But that's one of the things is get organized, hire to promote yourself. I mean, that's helped me out quite a bit.
So as you're growing and as you are firing yourself from those jobs, right, from the jobs that you need to hire other people, what have you experienced as in problems, or what are some problems that you face that you've had to overcome?
I think as you start to scale, employees are probably one of the number one issues that as a business owner we face, trying to find the right people, trying to find dependable people, not understanding that they don't care about your business as much as you do. That's probably been the most difficult thing is trying to scale up and put people in place and trust those people, and then being able to back away and letting those people take the reins and let them make the mistakes and then be there to support them when they do mess up or try to deal with customer issues that come up from employees.
And I always say this as, you know, as growing the pressure washing business, you got to become a good leader, right? Because if you can't lead people, it's going to hard to keep growing a business. And so as a leader, you have to put systems in place. Now, everybody has systems in place starting. Not everybody has good systems in place, but everybody does have a system in place. And so as you're building this business, what was some ways that helped you grow your business along the way?
Well, I would say me personally, my wife stepped into the business after she left her job. She got injured and was able to run the office. So my wife has been one of my biggest supporters. I have a 19-year-old son. You know, not everybody has those benefits, but those things really helped me. I was able to utilize my son earlier on growing the business, and he's been able to run a truck. Just some different things like that. That's really, really helped me. Just bringing our family into the mix and having a family business culture has really helped us. And then, of course, being organized, having systems and the CRMs and just putting all those things into place, it's been all one big piece of the puzzle, I guess.
One of the Facebook users, I don't know who it is, but what benefits do you offer your employees?
Well, earlier on, we didn't offer anything. We have we belong to a local BNI group, so there's some healthcare benefits, 401k options, things like that that we were able to kind of subsidize through our it's called Health Markets. So we use them to bring that in, and it's just a little extra that comes out of their check, and they're able to buy into a health plan just like they normally would with a normal employer.
Oh, this is Lindy. I know Lindy. I shouldn't even ask that question. No, I'm serious. I was just joking, Lindy. What systems do you hire when you put in the first few employees? That's a good question. So I remember when I first started, we didn't have very good systems at all when I had my employees. And as you start growing, you start putting systems in place. And, you know, as different people, you know, some of the systems is basically you filming yourself telling you how to do things, right? Those are systems that we have to put in place so that way our employees have a place to go find it, because you're probably not going to keep your employees. Some you may keep some of your employees, but we were ones that it was very hard to get and keep employees. Again, because it probably was because I wasn't the best leader, but that's kind of where you've got to start growing and start being able to make those things happen. And as you grow, you get better systems in place that will help you be able to get to the wherever you may want to go, whether you're trying to get to 100,000, a half a million, million, or 2 million, right? You still got to have systems in place to be able to get to where you want to be at. So as we move to, we talked about systems a little bit, let's talk about equipment. What are your thoughts on a truck for a company that wants to have two or three employees out on their own? What would be your thoughts on which way is the best way to go?
Gosh, that's a great question. Anybody that's tuned into our YouTube channel can see that we started out with a trailer. It was a single axle. Ran that myself for about 3 years, and then went to a flatbed, went to a box truck, went to a van, and then went to a skid, and kind of landed at the skid. That's where we stayed, and we've had several skids since then.
So let's go back to let's go back to the trailer days. What's the pros and cons of the trailer?
Well, there's definitely a lot of cons to it after running a skid, but some of the pros were, you know, I was working out of my house garage, so I was able to park it into the garage, back it in, and then my truck could still be used for, it was the family vehicle, a 4-door Tundra. So we're able to use the truck and run around and do things that we needed to do, and then grab the trailer when I needed to grab the trailer. It was able to fit inside as a 6x10 single axle. It was, in my opinion, pretty easy to work off of. I really liked the open trailer concepts. Everything was laid out pretty good. For a first build, it worked out pretty well. Didn't really give me a whole lot of issues.
Now, you moved up to the box truck. What are some pros and cons of the box truck?
Gosh, it was big. It was one of those NPRs. It was just weird to drive. I know there's some guys that have those NPRs and they really like them, but out in the metro Portland area, it's hard to get into some of those areas. The truck's just big and bulky and the roads are skinny and it's hard to back up. It's, you know, they do have some of the best wheel turn radiuses on those trucks, but it's big. It's hard to see by you. And we have teenagers. Well, not really teenagers. Well, my son's 19, but early 20s, we have basically kids running these things. And it was just a lot safer to go to a regular pickup truck.
Yeah, and even a trailer is next to impossible to get it backed up with teenagers or young guys that are running these vehicles. So, and then you went to, what are some pros and cons of the skids?
Skids. If you have a truck issue, you can obviously just forklift them off. We've had a couple little minor things over the years, and we just pulled it off of the forklift, sent the truck to the garage, and was able to put it back on. We've done some dryer vent cleaning, different things that we've had to load into the truck, so I was able to take the whole skid out. For maintenance, it's easy to maintenance them. You could fix it either on the truck or pull it off when you need to do things. Super easy to get to, easy to work off of. Everything's open. You don't have to worry about, you know, having bleach all over everything. You can just rinse it all off in the truck.
Yep, I agree. And as you grow with a skid, you know, there is some, you know, it is hard to work on sometimes if you don't have a way to pull them off of the truck. That would be the only con that I would see for that. And as you grow, it's definitely, it's hard for people to be able to, you know, I guess what I'm getting at is if that's your main vehicle, that can be the only downfall that I could see for you. And you're driving this thing all over the place.
Yep.
Nathan asks, is there an off season for people in Portland, Oregon?
It does slow down, if you want to call that an off season. There's a lot of gutter cleaning. The guys out here, most of them are doing Christmas lights. Christmas lights has taken off. It's become a big thing. We'll talk about later. There's some training classes that you'll be hosting out here. But Christmas lights and gutter cleaning are huge. And then also, you can save your commercial stuff if you're able to kind of shift that into the fall and winter. Those are great accounts to do during those seasons.
So if I was a brand new pressure washer business, what are the essentials equipment that we need to start a pressure washing business?
Brand new. This is kind of a loaded question because I took a severance and I wanted the best that I could get. Of course, it wasn't the best I've seen out there, but I would say at the bare minimum, you want a 4 GPM. I would bump that up to a 5.5, really, if budget allows. You want a belt or a gear drive. You want a good surface cleaner. Obviously, you want some type of soft wash system. Probably a 12-volt is going to be the most economical, easy-to-afford type system. And then you can batch mix. I batch mixed for about 3 months, and as soon as I seen the light and got a cheap little mixing system, that kind of changed my world. But then whatever vehicle that you're going to put that on, probably trailer is the easiest when starting out. I would think.
Yeah, I agree. There was another question here that I want to ask you, because this is something that I haven't been talked about. There's talk of a downstream at 5% with a 3 GPM half-inch hose. What do you say? Have you heard of that much, or have you seen it where they're force-feeding it pretty much?
I believe there's some technologies. There's some old and new technologies being mixed. Some of this stuff's been around for a long time. It just hasn't been really talked about, like you said. We are testing a couple different options. If I could run the pressure washer, Jason, I'm sure you're just like me, and you could get everything to downstream out of the pressure washer and change your mixes to do roofs and everything, that would definitely be the way to go. I've seen a couple other pieces of equipment come out to where they're doing some type of upstream system, but you still have all the maintenance concerns of the pump. So those things are on the horizon. Some of the stuff's out there. It's just like anything new when it comes out, or something that hasn't been used for what we're using it for now, you're going to see the breakdowns and maintenance issues. And I'm kind of just standing back and watching and somewhat testing some of that stuff now. And once we have something that's going to be dependable, I would never be the first one to market and say, hey, let's go ahead and roll this thing out when it's going to cause somebody a bunch of issues down the road. I'm not saying that those pieces of equipment out there now would, but definitely it's nothing really beats a downstreamer right now.
Yeah, we actually was talking about this. Downstreaming is one of those things. The reason why I love downstreaming is you can literally do everything except roof cleaning. You can do house washing. You can do everything except roof cleaning. And it's one of those things that you can make a lot of money off of pressure washing, of house washing, concrete cleaning. You can do everything with a downstreamer. Is there other tools out there? And as Nathan Brinker put, I hate 12 volts and I hate it 12 volts also, but I like 12 volts as it's $200 versus, you know, if for a good gas system or air system, you're looking at, you know, time, if you're going to do it right, you're looking at $5,000-$6,000. With mixer valves and electric bypasses and all kinds of stuff, and maybe even more. I know, because I just bought a bunch of this stuff that I'm going to be putting on for Rick up in New York here shortly. But, you know, it's one of those things that it does take time. And as, yes, gas systems are nice, and I do like them with that. DJ, my buddy, has one, so I get to use it whenever I ride around with him. And, you know, you can change how much mixture it is. But as a boss and having employees, I can't control when he turns the knob just a little too much or don't open a knob right, that I can't control that. And that's the reason why I always like the downstreamer. The downstreamer cost you, well, I don't even know what they cost you now, but $30 to $40 plus a J-rod or an M5 twist, and you're in business for $2,000, $3,000 versus a gas system that cost you $6,000 that you can't even do pressure washing with as concrete cleaning. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, 100%. I think we were talking a little bit before we jumped on this live. If I had my own rig and I was on the truck 100% of the time now and I was an owner-operator, I definitely have a gas system on there, but like you said, there's a cost associated with that. First and foremost, I would have a 12 volt on there because it's cheap. It's easy to switch out that pump. And if you build the equipment so the pumps can be switched out quickly, I mean, you minimize your downtime to like 15 minutes versus with the ARs and the P40s and things like that. If you don't have a good amount of those parts in stock, you could be waiting a week or two, or hopefully you got a local shop that's near you that has that stuff. But I mean, there's a lot of challenges. If you're going to run something like that, you need to have that stuff in stock or have access to it. There are a lot more expensive breakdowns and they take a little bit longer to fix, but they're great systems overall.
So as we talk about pressure washing equipment, what are some other must-haves for pressure washing equipment?
I mean, this is going to sound like an elementary thing, but I still see it a lot. Hose reels. You know, I still see guys coming into our shop and they're coiling things up and it's all like rat nested, and it's just the extra amount of time it takes to unroll all that stuff and then throw it back in the truck. So I would say And not just any hose reel. You want a good hose reel that has a stainless steel swivel and stainless steel internals.
Yeah, and what's the purpose of that?
It's going to stand up to the chemicals, especially the downstreaming and the soft wash. And you guys know that have been washing for a long time. You get a steel manifold, they don't hold up very long. They rust right out.
F-bomb put, I love my 12-volt system. A hell of a lot more control over it and way less runoff and overspray. And that's, you know, and that's a good point. You kill a lot of stuff with the gas pumps, and they're nice, but you got to be careful with them.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to a pressure washing business owner looking to scale their operations and build out effective systems and structures?
I jotted down some notes here to that one. I was trying to find it, but it's off to the side. So I'm just gonna shoot from what I know here. So what advice would I give?
Yep.
I would say definitely get off the truck as soon as you're going to get off the truck. I learned early on you could spend a lot of money on marketing. There's some great options out there: Facebook, Google Ads, yard signs, all that stuff. I was just talking to somebody about yard signs. This year, we're in an election year, so it's going to be crazy with the amount of probably political signs that are going to be out there. But I would say figure out how you're going to get leads. And one of the best ways that I figured out is networking. There's BNI groups, there's Chamber of Commerce. There's other businesses that you can network with. There's other businesses that you can refer and partner up with them. If there's other services that you need around your house, use those businesses, talk with them, go into restaurants, shake hands. There's a lot of boots on the ground work that you're going to have to do. You're going to have to work. And some of the things that people see where it just looks like somebody's doing over $1 million in a year, that all of a sudden you bought all this equipment and then all this stuff just drops in your lap. It doesn't quite work like that. It's like anybody that has a lot of success, it takes a lot of work. You know, sometimes we're still up at our shop till 9 o'clock at night, you know, trying to catch up on all the things that happen throughout the day and trying to close everything out. My wife's up here a lot of times with me. We're trying to balance that stuff. But even somebody that's been in business for 7 years, you know, you guys are probably working on estimates into the night. It just takes a lot of hard work.
You mean there's no easy button?
I haven't found it.
So, you know, I say that because everybody wants the easy button, right? Everybody, you know, the 80-20 rule works in a lot of things, and pressure washing businesses is one of the things that 80-20 rule works in. 80% of people are going to fail and 20% are going to be successful. And what's going to make the 20% successful is they're not going to give up and they're going to do the hard work. Again, when you're a business owner, it isn't like you just go in at 9 o'clock and come home at 4 o'clock and that's all you got to do, right? There's a lot of stuff that goes on that you have to do. And especially if you haven't hired it out. So you got a marketing hat, you got a sales hat, you got a HR hat, you got a receiving payments, you got getting your chemicals, you got to work on equipment, you got to get jobs done, right? And all of these things are different hats that you have to work, and it is stressful. There is times that you will work all the time and it is stressful. There's times that you're going to win, sometimes you're going to fail. And so it's important that, you know, I will never say that this is an easy business. This is not an easy business. It's a business, and business, you have to work, right? It's not, oh, it's a business and you're going to make all this money. Can you make good money? Sure you can. Can you lose good money? Sure you can, right? And so as Tim is saying, right, networking, I agree 100%. It is a great way to get business. But it takes time, or you got to hire a salesman to be able to do it too. So those are some ways to do that. You have to think about it. Someone asked, where do you find out about the Chamber of Commerce? Just type in Chamber of Commerce near you, and there will probably be one at every city or every, there's several of them usually. I'm in right now, I bet you I could go find two or three of them in my area of different chamber of commerce. Usually it's a bunch of business owners, and that's what comprises of the Chamber of Commerce.
I will say on the Chamber of Commerce, you're not going to visit it once or twice. It's definitely a long play. Any of the networking stuff is definitely a long play. It's going to take time. They want to build trust, but you know, if you put the time in, it could be very rewarding.
Michael says he loves your builds. So
thank you,
Mr. Michael Lowe. My estimates are done right on the spot. If in person and if I'm at home, I send it out in minutes, nothing done overnight unless I had $50,000 bid. And you know, that's a big thing. You know, actually, I'm going to ask Tim this. What separates you and your competition?
Myself and my competition. Well, we kind of run two businesses, the wash side and, of course, our store and builds. I would say on the wash side, you know, we're detailed, we're uniformed, we're clean, we're going to go the extra mile, we're fully insured, you know, all that stuff that most people probably on here are already doing that. But if there's an issue, we're going to fix it. We're going to go the extra mile. We're going to get the mailbox. We're going to get the pole. It's going to be done with detail. You know, it's just a detailed cleaning process, and we have systems. We're going to follow up with you. We're going to send you thank you cards. We're going to send you a gift certificate for yourself and your neighbors and your family. You know, all those things. We're going to check on you in a year to see how you're doing, to see how things are going. We're going to follow up on our roof warranties. Probably the follow-up is probably, you know, I didn't touch on this earlier, but it's one of the things where you can do the most amount of work and grow your business. It took a lot of money. It took a lot of time to get these customers. If you can keep your customers, that's how you grow your business.
What, you're telling me that CRM is more than just holding people's names?
Yes. It's gold.
Let me ask you this. How many people you know that have never sent a text message, that's never sent an email out of that $400 a month CRM?
It's such a waste. I can't tell you how many times a day where somebody replies to an email and my wife's in the office. She's like, look at this job we just booked, $1,600 job, like from that automated follow-up. I'm like, no way. I mean, we're not surprised anymore. It happens all the time. But those follow-up emails in your CRM definitely go a long ways.
And if you're not doing it, you need to start doing it because it is very important. And I'm not, you know, and I was making a joke, but I'm not, because it's way cheaper to get customers that you've already done work for. They know, like, and trust you, and they love you, and they will get you more work here. But you've got to go out there and get your business, right? You've already done the work for them. They already love you. Why would you not give them more to reach out to them? And, you know, even the calling, call them. Don't be afraid to get on the phone and call them and say, you know, and just ask, check up on them and see if they need anything else. And even if you did work last year, guess what? They might need something else, and or that you may offer something else. This is one thing that's been driving me crazy lately, because I have been, as I've been coaching people and doing things, people don't follow up. And it's like, you know, it's one of those things that you got to follow up. So Benjamin Gregory, a lot of you guys know Benjamin Gregory. I always talk about him. He does great work for LinkedIn. He did $1.5 million last year. Most of it was all off of LinkedIn. He sent an email out. He's actually my competitor. Like, he used to live 10 minutes from me. Now he lives about 15 minutes from me. And he sent an email out last week or 2 weeks ago when I was in Florida. And he's like, can you believe I sent out 25 emails and I had 15 quotes within an hour? And by the end of the day, I had 30 quotes. I'm like, I've been telling you, how long have I been telling you need to send emails out? 30 quotes within 8-10 hours. It's important that we follow up. You already got that. You got to follow up. Yep. So what CRM, here's, I've gotten two questions on this one. So we'll ask Tim, what CRM are you using and why?
I'm using House Call Pro, not getting paid to promote them or anything like that. It's just, we've been with them for probably near 6 years, tinkered with a few other ones and did some of their free trials, but it has the follow-up sequences that I like. It has some automations that I like. It has the text alerts on the way. I'm sure some of the other ones do all that stuff now, but I'm just most familiar with it. It works for us. It's clean, simple, and it seems like it's been pretty reliable over the years.
What are you asking, Michael? Would you take time to present something and not follow up? And actually, this is another thing, right? People don't even follow up on their bids that they send out. You know how many times I deal, you know, if you're not using something to follow up with, you're wasting money at the end of the day. I mean, you're burning money when you're not following up. You got to follow up. You'll be surprised how many jobs you close just by following up sequence. You know, hey, is there any questions that I can, you send a text, send it, you know, when I had my follow-up systems, we were sending text, we were sending emails, and we were calling them. And you know what? You will be surprised at how many jobs you will get just by following up. And, you know, and a lot of times people ask, how many times is too many? They'll tell you when too many times is too many. Cause they'll be like, will you take me off your list? You won't shut up. But you know what? A lot of times when you do this, and what Tim was talking about of how he follows up and lets them know we're on the way and following up, guess what? I bet you if you go look at his reviews, it'll say that in the reviews that, man, they communicated very good. And you know what? That's the best review you can get is when you have amazing communication. So what does I'm going off of questions now. What would your roof warranties consist of? Here's the thing. Before we go into that, most people don't understand what type of moss you all have over on your side of the country. What type of roof cleanings do you all offer in Portland?
Yeah, our roofs are crazy. I'm pretty jealous of what you guys do over there, over on that side of the United States. You guys got it good. You just get up there from the talk about from the ladder line and spray it, and it goes from black to gray. That's not out here. So what we have to do is get up on the roof, set anchors, you know, do all that fun stuff. And then we have to basically give the roof a haircut, and then we have to apply the soft wash solution and treat the roof.
So tell me about getting a haircut, because a lot of people don't understand this. What do you mean by giving it a haircut?
We have big pieces of moss, big bally baseballs. we have some big moss out here.
Right. And so when you got moss, you're talking what I always talk about, like carpet moss, 1, 2, 3 inches long, correct?
Yeah.
So what's the best way to knock that off in the beginning? What's the best way to knock that carpet moss off?
Well, we do what would be considered a no-no maybe on some of the other areas of the United States. We don't pressure wash it, so don't worry. I'm not going to say that. But you have to get up there with a nylon brush, and I say like the nylon yellow bristle brush, and you brush down not against the shingles. You lightly brush it just to take the big pieces that could be lightly removed from the roof, and then we, you know, you blow it, clean out the gutters, and then spray the solution.
And then when you got to clean out the gutters, once all this stuff runs into the gutters, all the thick moss, or how do you handle that part of what you've knocked off?
Yeah, we blow the roof off. If you can blow the gutters out, that's nice. Sometimes you have to hand pick them and clean them out. But then you have to do all that before you can even apply the soft wash solution.
Gotcha. And then after that, do you rinse it, or do you just let the rain rinse the rest of it off?
We don't rinse it, but I know there's a lot of people that do, and that can be debated either way. We get a lot of rain out here, so in our region, it works really well for the weather, the wind, the rain to remove those things. But I'll tell you, if you don't set the proper expectations with your customer, if that's going to be your process, you're going to have callbacks within, you know, a couple of weeks. They say, hey, the stuff's still here. A lot of that can be avoided by making sure that we're educating customers.
And that's the only reason why I was hitting on this, because most of the country don't realize that out west is carpet moss. When you're talking the northeast or northwest up there, of you're talking thick stuff, nastiness is what you're talking about. And that, what happens if you just sprayed it and you didn't actually knock it all off?
Well, it looked like a big giant roof of cotton candy. It may or may not come off depending on how thick it is. It depends on the pitch too. If it's not a real bad pitch, it's going to be up there for a little bit. But you really do got to knock down some of the big stuff and get the big stuff out of the way.
Gotcha. Like I say, I've done some, one of my first houses that had carpet moss on it because it had a bunch of trees on it. But that's the only time I ever had to deal with ever having to worry about knocking it off. So that's the only reason why I wanted you to hit on it a little bit more. So.
Yeah, we have fun ones out here. That's for sure.
So as you were growing your business and you started adding more trucks, when did you decide what milestone or what place was it that you got to a point that you thought you needed to add another truck?
We were booking about 3 weeks out or so, close to 4 weeks out. And at that point, it's a lot harder now. If you book out that far, customers are possibly going to call another company. They want it done sooner. But we started booking way out, and the capacity, we knew that we had more capacity to add another truck, earn more revenue. And then as we got to the capacity on the second truck that we were fully booked out and we were doing, 3 to 4 weeks, then we added another one.
And what's your goal per truck?
I like to be somewhere around the $300,000 per year per truck.
Now, is that $2,000 a day per truck? $1,500 per truck?
Yeah, it's going to vary in that $15,000 to $2,000. If we did all the math, it might not completely add up to that. But there's variances in that. But I'm pretty happy with $2,000 a day per truck.
And are you running one guy trucks or two man trucks?
Both. So when we have a truck that's doing all roof cleaning, there'll be two guys on that one. Okay. And then if it's just a little job, I don't really think it's super efficient if you're doing house washing or flat work, things like that, that are a bunch of residential jobs, to have two guys out there. I'm sure you could run a couple pressure washers on a flatbed or whatever, but it's just, we like to do one guy for those types of jobs.
Gotcha. I was just curious, so that way I know people that are wanting to scale, this is important questions that a lot of people don't realize of what you need to look at, right? You need to know how much you can do per truck, and to know your numbers. When was you a numbers guys all along, or when was it that you started realizing that you needed to know your numbers to be able to grow and scale and not be profitable otherwise?
In my previous business, I worked in the corporate field for a large retailer, and numbers was a big part of what we did and what we looked at. We judged everything, all of our metrics, off of numbers. So if the numbers in the end, that's your money. In the end, if the numbers don't line up, everything that you're doing up until that point is a complete waste of time sometimes. I've seen guys, they just run themselves ragged. I had one in the shop last week. And he's like, Tim, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm wore out. I'm not making money. My truck payment's late. And we basically had to sit down and say, look, man, you're taking advantage of yourself. So I think in the end, to kind of answer your question, it all comes down to the numbers. And if you're not looking at the numbers first, everything that you're doing up to that point could be a complete waste.
But I'm making $200-$300 an hour, and that's all I need to do. Or I'm at $200. Why is it important that we, I'm a big guy, a proponent of raise your prices, and it's because if you don't know your numbers, that's one way to overcome it usually. But as we do this, this is why it is important to know our numbers. What are some key factors of knowing our numbers? Is it just how much we pay for gas and bleach, or what are some factors that we need to look at to make sure that when we're calculating what our numbers are?
Well, you need to look at a job fully loaded. What are your expenses? Some of you guys have shop rent, your truck payment, if you financed equipment, what your workers' comp is. Like, all this stuff you have to add up, and you have to find the equation percentage of cost. And you can kind of estimate that out and have a general fully loaded cost per job. It works easier with a percentage. And that'll give you, that'll kind of give you a baseline of, say, if it's 30%, 60%, what every business is going to be a little bit different depending on the structure. But that'll, if you know your numbers as far as what your cost is per job by percentage, then you can base everything off of that. All your decisions, how you scale, you know, how you price things.
And as you're building your business, right, a lot of times we think we're just pressure washers, or we're just a pressure washer. But we're really a business owner. And if you want to be a successful business owner, you need to know your numbers. And if you don't know your numbers, you need to figure it out. It's important that you know your numbers. You can make, I know people that made million-dollar businesses, and they worry, you know, if, just because that top line says $1 million or $2 million, whatever it might say, if your bottom line is 10%, it's not worth it in the end. Or some of you might not even be 10%. Some of, you know, you make $1 million and you spent $960,000. So you made $40,000 at the end, and that's not worth it, you know? And so that's why it's important that we got to make sure that we are being successful in the end.
I mean, if you're going to be the guy that's working all these long hours and putting all this into your business, you deserve better. You deserve to make more. And if in the end you're not watching your numbers and you're just losing money, it's, you could have done better with a clock in job than being a business owner.
Mm-hmm. What mistakes you learned hard when scaling your business?
Oh, there's a lot, probably.
Just pick one or two, right?
the pricing was probably one of the biggest things. You have to be able to account for variances and making mistakes. And I remember early on, I took a blue house and turned it light blue with the organic. I always thought that it was just something that was a mystery out there. Like that, I've heard people talk about it. It's never going to happen to me. I started spraying. I'm like, oh my goodness, this thing is running. I mean, there's been some things like that. There's been wood. I think I've learned everything, just about everything, the hard way. But, I got a 5-star review out of that situation. It was all how you when you learn those mistakes and you make those mistakes, how you take care of the customer and how you go about the actual fix for those situations.
Michael Lowe put, Tim, any pressure tips you might use to carefully remove that moss?
On the roofs, your brush is going to work. It's to minimize and be the most efficient. The brush is going to take off most of it. If you really wanted to get up there with an M5 twist, you probably could. It's not our process, but I've heard of guys doing it. But I think a brush and a blower is going to come off the easiest.
So we're going to shift a little bit. What made you start building equipment in Portland?
Gosh, and I've loved equipment. The first time I built my trailer, for anybody that's followed our YouTube journey, I loved building that. I'm mechanical. I like putting things together. I played with Legos a lot when I was younger. I just like using my hands and building things. I love washing as well, but I have a love for the equipment. And we've put things together. We've troubleshooted things. We've helped other local washers out. And just having those experiences and being in a position where I can help people, the business has kind of grown organically from that. And, I see so many things out there. It's just a piece of equipment that somebody's putting out there for sale, but it doesn't really have a lot of impact on the end user. It looks flashy. It's nice. And there's a lot of great builders out there. I'm not tearing on anybody particularly, but I've seen a lot of stuff out there built, and it's flashy, looks cool, but it's just a pain in the butt to operate it. It's a pain in the butt to maintenance it. It's not realistic out in the work field. It's, you can't change a pump out easily. And I've had a love for building and a love for trying to take something that is something, piece of equipment that we use every day, and make it better. And I've, you know, just kind of grown from there.
Gotcha. And what made you be like, I want to do this for other people?
I like to help people.
Yep, that's why you got a YouTube channel helping people, right?
early on, we sold some bleach pumps, and I won't mention any brands, but it was just a terrible pump, and we ended up giving away all those pumps to help people. I've probably given more a lot of times than what I've made, but you know, people are able to get out there. They're able to run their businesses and make money. And I think if you're authentic and you're real and you realistically want to help people, I think the rest takes care of itself.
And if you, do you make equipment for everybody across the country, or do you do mostly about people up in the Northwest area?
We serve the nation now. We started out just with the local community of washers out here in the Pacific Northwest, but we've shipped out now all over the nation. So that's been a real fun journey, and talking to people and shooting videos of them with their equipment when they get it. Yeah, we're shipping it out all over now.
Now, this question is to my ass about this other question, so I'm going to hit on it. Well, I'm going to see what I'll let you hit on it first, and then we'll go from there. Do you guys have any advice for partnerships? I've been working with another local guy my age. We are both young, and working together has both improved us tremendously. I'm hoping to have him focus on pressure washing while I take more focus toward the staining wood restoring side of things, doubling efforts to increase our horizons. What are your thoughts on partnerships?
I'll give you some of my, and these are all just personal opinion based stuff. So I'm not a fan of partnerships. I think you have to split the money, and you have to share the money. I guess I'm kind of in a partnership with my wife, but all the money stays in the same household, so that's fine.
It's all hers anyway.
Yeah, but we've been approached. We've people have asked that we would do different types of our partnerships and join forces and promote things and do all kinds of crazy stuff. And it's just a lot simpler if I stay in my lane. If they want to scale something and start a business that's the same as what we're doing, I mean, we help everybody out locally. I don't look at anybody as a competitor, like they're going to take business from us. And that's just how we've done it. I'm just not a fan of the partnerships, but it might work for somebody else though.
Yeah. And the biggest thing I would tell you is have everything legally written out by a lawyer. Yeah. So that way, you know what buyouts are, you know what, if anything goes south, I mean, it can be hard. I was in a partnership and it can be hard. So, definitely make sure you have everything legally written out of what you like. This is, you know, if this person wants out or this person wants to buy out, this is what it costs. This is, you know, everything of that is written out, the whole nine yards. So that's what I would say to, that. Michael Lowe asked if you would, talk a little bit about daily maintenance for your equipment.
Man, I wrote down a list here because I knew that was going to be one of the questions that came up. So I'm just going to roll right through them. I have six that I wrote down here that I think are super important enough to write them down and cover them with you guys. But rinse. You want to keep everything rinsed down. And one of the most simplest things you can do to maintain your equipment is just keep it clean. I see a lot of buildup, beat up stuff. It has grime all over it, has bleach sprayed all over it, and that would go along with rinsing it. But overall, just keeping it clean. We wipe down our trucks and equipment every single day. And if I took my phone, I would take you into our shop. Our truck is shining right now. And it's like that daily. And I know if I set the standard for our guys to keep things clean, they're going to take care of it. And that's just our standard. Run 92 or better or non-ethanol fuel in your pressure washers. Throw some stable 360 in there. It's all right to run good gas in those things. It'll corrode the carburetors a little bit less and prolong them. Change the fluids on time. If you're supposed to change it at 50 for the break-in on the oil, change it at 50. Don't let things go, and I'm sure it'll run. People will probably not change their oil in cars 3,000 miles over, and the car still runs, but it's just not a chance I'm willing to take. So if it's every 100 hours, then change it at every 100 hours. Change your pump at every 500 hours or whatever the manufacturer calls for. on the equipment that you're running. And then the next one, don't run your equipment with when you have a bunch of small issues and just kind of just running it and just thinking that it's going to be okay and you'll catch up on it when you get time. If there's a small issue, fix the small issue so the small issues don't turn into big issues. Just like we keep our trucks 100% clean, we keep our equipment at 100%. We'll pull a skid out, completely go through it, and make sure everything's 100%. You know, that can affect efficiency too. If you're not taking care of your equipment and you're out in the field and you have a breakdown, what's that breakdown going to cost you in time going back to the shop, possibly losing that job? There's a whole slew of things when you let the little things go that turn into bigger things. And then last thing here is keep the equipment out of the elements as much as possible. I know not everybody has a garage or a carport or whatever, but if it's a tarp or there's a way that you can winterize your equipment, try to keep it out of the elements for extended periods of time. And if you have a shop, keep it in a shop under a carport. One of the cheapest shops, one of my first shops obviously was my home garage, but if that's not a possibility, storage unit. I was super happy. It's like 3 or 4 years ago, I got my first storage unit. I was able to park our flatbed in there, and it was climate controlled by that, probably 50 degrees, but nothing froze, and it was kept out of the elements. And those are my tips to help make your equipment last a little bit longer.
No, them are all good tips because, you know, even that small leak that you're like, it's just leaking there, and you don't fix it, and then it gets down, especially the ones that are on your electric hose reels, and you don't fix it, and the next thing you know, it's spraying right into the motor, and the next thing you know that that $600 motor is shot because you allowed that water to spray in there when all it would have took is to either tighten it up or reseal it or whatever it might have been would have saved you a lot more time and energy in the end. So,
yeah.
I'm going to hit on this one again because how old are you, Power Wash, in 219? I'm hoping to get this situated now as there's some tensions that we'll be working through. We both are willing and able to communicate without hostility. I'm just trying to seek some wise. The one thing I would tell you, too, when you're dealing with partnerships is, you know, one person is going to do one person is going to do sales marketing and the other person is probably more hands-on and going to do the side of the rig, you know, and sometimes you'll be like, well, I'm doing more work and, you know, it's just a different job, you know, a person running the rig versus someone going out making sales calls, you know, it might not look like this person might not be working as hard. He might not be, but he may be able to keep you busy. And so that's kind of where you have to sit there. And so you're 20 years old in my fourth season. So you kind of got this already. So I don't know if you're trying to bring in a partnership or you're trying to not. And so that's where I would just be like, you know, you got to set boundaries and you all can't be working on the same thing. Otherwise, there's no need for a partnership because at that point, one of you are an employee at that point. So you kind of got to set the boundaries of who's going to do what and how you, and they're going to be in charge of that. And so, you know, if you're in charge of equipment, he doesn't start telling you how to do equipment because you're in charge of it. And same way with sales, you kind of got to sit there and let each person run their role of what they need to do for that. So the only ship that's guaranteed to sink is a partnership. And so I'm not disagreeing. Some partnerships can work really great. Some not so much. Mrs. Trudy, how are you doing? I actually saw her in Florida a couple weeks ago. Hi, Tim and Jason. So that's kind of where we are with that.
Trudy's a Oregon native, by the way.
Oh, the Power Wash 219 is?
Or if it's Trudy from Florida?
Yeah, Trudy from Florida, yeah.
Yep, she's a native from out here.
Yeah, I did hear that. She did say that. This is my exact situation right now. I don't feel like it's balanced with workforces. I'm sales marketing side of things, hoping to get him more operational side of things to make the thing. Yeah. So those are some things that you may need to look at. All right. So one thing that we also got going on is I am going to go across the country and make my way to Oregon. and we are going to do a training out there. Now, we talked about this a little bit beforehand. If you were 7 years ago and you knew what you know now, what are some things that you would do back then that you would do now, that you didn't do back then, but you would do now?
Knowing what I know now, I mean, I would shortcut this thing. I would go to official training, and I'm not trying to pitch a train or pitch something so we can make money training people. But if there was a way that I could have figured out how to not turn a house light blue or how not to damage wood or figure out what was the best pressure washing setup, I've spent so much money on equipment. I got like totes full of stuff in my shop that I'll probably never, ever use. The amount of money that I've spent on stuff through the learning process is far more than what you would ever spend on an official training. If you get it from us, you get it from Jason, you get it from somewhere else. I can't stress enough to having some official training to kind of shortcut and minimize, because you're going to spend the money the hard way or you're going to spend it the easy way. It comes down to how do you want to spend it.
And so I am having a training out with Tim in April. It's going to be pressure washing, Christmas lights, and marketing. Mm-hmm. It's 3 days. Pressure washing is one day. Marketing's the middle day. And Christmas lights the last day. And so the way I built my training is off of my mistakes. It's literally how I built my training. Bill Bradley said, you need training. It's a must. YouTube is not enough. And, you know, you can learn it from YouTube. And I've put everything out there I've got online. But, you know, the way I've started to do my in-person training is you actually get to do it. I feel like a lot of times, if you know, I can talk to myself blue in the face, but it is a training that you can do. You can go check out KPW Train. You can go check out King of Pressure Wash, Christmas Lights, or you can reach out to Tim. He's probably just going to send you to those two places. But it is something that it will be worth your investment if you're thinking about doing Christmas lights or pressure washing. I mean, I think that I've helped a lot of people that I've seen even on this call that I've helped. And so they've come to my training, and it is definitely a hands-on training where you get to do everything. But it is something that I will be going to out on the West Coast. This is my second time out on the West Coast. I was out a couple years ago. I did one in Seattle, but this one will be down in Portland. So it is definitely something that you should probably think about doing. There's training then. They're seeing it in person. Whole different story. And so the good thing about this training is, and this is what I always tell people too, is the network that you find at these trainings. Obviously, I did a million. Tim did a million last year. So you get to learn different strategies of what works and what doesn't. And so it is definitely something that I would highly recommend you to do. I don't care if you do it or not. I want you to be successful. That's my goal, is I want you to be successful. Tim wants you to be successful. You know, he don't want to sell you equipment if you're not going to be successful and it puts you in hardship. Nobody wants that. I don't want to put you in hardship. You know, if you can't afford it, I tell you what, you go get on my YouTube channel, you go get on Tim's YouTube channel, and I'll pretty much, you will have everything you need between the two channels of us. And that's a guarantee. You know, I know everything that I've ever taught is out on YouTube. Now, what I teach in this class is I've been doing this for 5 years now. I've done it to where I wanted to make sure that you are able to understand it. And when you go home, you will do it. And it's kind of like Tim said, you know, I've had so many people be like, man, I wish I'd have came to this class first before I bought all this equipment that I'm not going to use. And so, you know, I'm going to tell you the equipment to use, and I'll tell you the chemicals you're going to use. I know there's a lot of people that want to sell you lots of chemicals, and you don't need all the chemicals that you need to do. And so Tim will sell them to you, and I will highly promote them at that point too. But if you don't need them, don't buy them. That's where I've kind of always been. What's your thoughts on all of the stuff there of chemicals and different things. Tim?
There's a lot of stuff out there. I do think, yeah, there's a lot of things that have their place. But if I had to focus on just a few things, I would have a good house wash soap. I'd have bleach. I'd have water. Those three things right there, you can clean pretty much 95% of anything out there that needs to be cleaned. Of course, different dilution rates and different things. But those are the main ingredients. And learning how to use those three ingredients together to clean things can go a long ways.
Yep. Bradley came to my class last year, and he posted up there earlier that he did $60,000 last year, first year out of the chute. And there is people that, you know, that will be coming for Christmas lights. If you just want to do Christmas lights, or you just want to do pressure washing, you can, or if you want to do both, you can do that. But you know, there is people that will come and they're just coming for Christmas lights, and they're already doing six figures, seven figures and a bit another business. And so that's the cool thing about getting around people that can help you, grow your business. I have to laugh at this one because I haven't seen this guy in a long time. Watch Dan's vlogs for washing education. Sorry, Tim. You remember Dan's vlogs?
Dan?
Dan's vlogs.
The house wash man. Is he on?
No, he's not on. Michael just posted something about it. That's why I saw that comment come across, and that made me chuckle a little bit because I haven't seen that one in a while. He showed you how to use a pump-up sprayer on your backpack that would wash your house for you that way and burn your butt and get you third-degree burns on your butt too. So, but other than that, go check it out. But I do want to ask Tim one or two more questions. What is one book or podcast that helped you grow your business to get you to where you want to be at?
I'll probably butcher the name, but How to Win Friends and Influence People. Is that the title?
Yeah.
That was one of the ones I listened to on the audiobook. I've read the paperback book. I've actually suggested that to my kids because I think there's a lot of different things that you can pick up in that book that'll just help you out in just plain life situations. But I think if you can get some of the core things that book teaches and apply it to your business, that's going to help you grow. As far as podcasts, there's a lot of them out there. Jason, I listened to a lot of your stuff early on. You've been in the industry for a very long time. And even back when I was getting started, you're probably a little bit further than I was. So, you know, I appreciate the content that you've put out over the years and all the YouTube channels or the YouTube videos and the things that you've done. We were similar. We've talked about equipment and different resources and have just tried to help people out. So I think your stuff, YouTube, that book that I mentioned, those are all great resources.
Carnegie is the person that wrote that too. Dale Carnegie is the one that wrote that. If you're wanting to look it up, How to Win Friends and Influence Others is a great book for sure. 100%. And if you was just starting out, what are some words of encouragement for a new guy?
Work hard, be consistent, be authentic, invest in your business. And I wrote these things down because I thought it was important to make sure that you guys got these thoughts directly from me. And then the business is a long play. You know, you're not going to start this thing just like we talked about it in the beginning, and overnight it's going to be a success. I know that there's some situations where that does happen. That's great. You should be thankful for the early success, but continue to grow, do good work. I think if you do those things and you're consistent about it, it's going to grow organically.
Yep, I would agree 100% on that. Again, the biggest takeaway is be consistent. You know, it isn't, I see so many people, they'll do one thing and then they give up. And so that is definitely something that you got to be consistent. You got to throw mud on the wall and see what sticks. And when you see what sticks, keep hammering the nail. Don't let it stop. You know, you got to keep doing it. You know, even when you're in 3-4 years, you can't stop one thing and do another thing because it's probably not going to work in the end. So being consistent is a hard thing for a lot of people to do. And as Michael put here, stay humble, hustle hard. And I agree with him 100%. It is definitely something that you got to do. So with that, I appreciate you coming on tonight. I hope that you all learned something this week. Give us some thumbs up. Give me some thoughts. If you've watched it this far and you go, give me some thoughts on what you learned from this video. So other than that, I hope you all have a great night. Tim, hang on, and I'll talk, and we'll see you all later. All right, guys, that is all the time we have for today's show on the King of Pressure Wash podcast. I know you found this as exciting as I did. If you appreciate the work we do here at King of Pressure Wash, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And give this episode a 5-star review. I would appreciate it very much. This helps me get to other people so that they can be successful just like you can be also. And if you're looking to start and grow your own pressure washing business to give you and your family financial freedom, time freedom, be sure to sign up at thekingofpressurewash.com so you can be the King of Pressure Washing in your area.